AgBio Science is supported by Indiana Farm Bureau.
I can't predict the future and what's going to happen there, Caleb, but I can certainly say buckle up and maybe not plan for the future. For me, that's hard to do, but I can certainly prepare for it and think about how am I going to react in terms of technology? How am I going to react if we have another 2 years worth of $4 corn and $10 beans? And what kind of technology can I afford? And how am I going to find out where am I going to get the best payoff for the technology that I want to buy?
Welcome to AgBio Science, the number one podcast in the world for innovation in food, animal health, plant science, ag tech, and agriculture. From market volatility to high input costs and beyond, farmers have faced a series of unique challenges. And farm management is something that they need to get a grasp on looking forward to 2026. This week, we're joined by Dwight Robb, advisor for Farm Business Farm Management, to examine the balance between innovation adoption and financial management. He talks about what farmers who are succeeding do well, how they plan for their operations, and the advice he'd give heading into 2026. Please enjoy this conversation with Dwight Robb from Farm Business Farm Management on AgBio Science. Dwight, thanks so much for joining us on AgBio Science.
Glad to be here this morning.
We've got a lot to get into today. Before we do, I really want to start with a high-level overview. Farm business, farm management, the work you do, and how you aim to serve Midwest farmers through data-driven decisions.
We do, truly. Look for data-driven decisions. So FBFM got its start back in 1924, so been in existence for over 100 years now. We would have a staff of, just over 100 full-time staff between our frontline farm business consultants, our staff accountants in our offices, and the folks who man our state office and do all the things that make FBFM run from a company perspective behind the scenes. They do all that work from about 40 offices, most of them in Illinois, some in Indiana now. So we're looking to branch out there. We have a truly dedicated set of staff. My coworkers is who they are. So we work with about 5,500 farms, and what we do for those farms on a day in and day out basis, they subscribe, if you will. So they're subscribers to FBFM. We have a 95%+ retention rate. So we work with the same families year in and year out. I've had the privilege. Most of my coworkers have had the privilege of working with the same set of farmers through multiple generations. So we get to do some transition planning. It's much more than just accounting. The relationships are deeper than that. I'm not going to slight any one industry, but the relationships that we have are deep. Sometimes your relationships that we have, we expect there to be turnover. You know, machinery salesman, a seed salesman, those kind of things. Our staff do not expect turnover in FBFM. They bear their financial souls, and it's more than just a financial soul that they're bearing with us, because we know all the players of the game. We know, you know, which aunts and uncles don't get along with each other and when that got started and all those kind of things. So it's a very deep relationship, but it is numbers based. It is accounting based. So our first goal is to help them keep a good set of records for a year, because Caleb, most farmers don't get up every day saying, I got to get caught up on my records today. They just don't think that way. And so we provide that function to help them with that. And then we monitor that throughout the year to make sure that we've got corn sales in our corn sales code and bean sales in our bean sales code, because we do much work with that data at the end of the year. The majority of the work that we do with that is we aim to produce a set of reports at the end of the year. Accrual income statements, balance sheets, sources and uses, cash flows, all those type of things. And we don't stop with that set of reports, because for me to tell one of our members what their debt to asset ratio is or what their current ratio is, it doesn't mean anything if I can't put it in context for them so that they know what it means and so that they know more about their business and can run their business better. Our goal is to help them be successful. They have to define what successful is. Some of them want to make a ton of money. Some of them want to buy land. Some of them want to pass the farm on to the next generation. So our goal is to use the accounting and the numbers to help them achieve those goals. So we do that on a year in and year out basis. We are governed by a board of directors from a company point of view. We are a bit different from many private businesses. We are a 501c5 not for profit, which means we have no shareholders. So our board of directors are only responsible two ways. They're responsible, to staff and to our members. So there's no shareholders to keep happy or anything like that. So the revenue that we come in, the board of directors would see that, we're using that appropriately to provide service and adequately reward our staff for what they do.
Farmers, they don't like to keep those records. You're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. And it's because they've got all these other things they're worried about. And they've had these incredible sets of unique challenges in front of them this year, especially market pressures, high input costs, interest rates. The list could go on. What has this year looked like for the FBFM farmer? And how has this set of headwinds sort of set them up for a new year of planning heading into 2026?
Well, you're right, Kayla. It is time to start thinking about 2026. It was probably time to start thinking about 2026, middle of the summer. With the era that we're in right now, and it may be a little bit of background of what led up to this. You know, we didn't just get to where we are just right now. In my mind, this current era, we've been working on this for a couple of years. We can show that we've had, on average, we've had draws on working capital for the last 2 years. Right. So we had some good years in there where we built up our working capital. You know, those were back when we had good commodity prices, and now we're in an era where those prices aren't there. And so we're making some draws on our working capital. I tend to think of things right now in terms of, working capital is kind of golden right now. I mean, net worth changes. Net worth doesn't change nearly as quickly as working capital does. Working capital is golden right now. And for a farm operator to be aware of what adds to working capital and what subtracts from working capital, those are good things to know right now. You know, kind of the lightning rod on what subtracts from working capital for a farm operator, family living. You know, so we've got a myriad of things, that make a difference in terms of, what adds to working capital, what subtracts from working capital, all the while, yes, they are managing many different things. I've had the opportunity to teach a senior level farm management class, and we talk about accounting on the farm. And by the time I'm done with that little lesson in accounting, they're all glazed over. And so that gives me my chance to drive home my point of, this farm accounting function and the reporting and knowing your business, it's not negotiable, but you don't have to do it all yourself. Right. There are organizations, there are people, FBFM would be one of them that can help with that function. So God gives us all different skills and abilities. We have them. My coworkers have them. But farmers have them too. So we like to make sure that we're complementing each other with what we do. And we think we do that very well. This current era though, higher interest rates. I'm 64, Kayla. So my wife and I bought our first house in 1983. And paid 10% interest on a house, you know, so we've been down since then up until, you know, the COVID era. But now we're back to what I consider to be normal interest rates. I think a 3% interest rate on a farm mortgage is not normal. I think a 6 or 7% interest rate on a farm mortgage is normal. So I think we're back to an era where we're going to have to make sure that we're paying attention to everything that's going on farm wise, financial wise, because we just have to know what's going on. If there was stress on the farm, and stress doesn't mean poor credit quality. Stress just means that, we got more than enough places to put all the cash. We just have to know about our farm businesses. The folks that I work with, they've heard me say this more than once. If we have a credit ask to make, whether that's simply renewing a revolving line of credit, or if we have a purchase that we need to make, be that, machinery or real estate, we need to know our business well enough that when we go into the lender's office, we know what the answer is going to be. We don't need to go into the lender's office saying, what do you think? We need to go into the lender's office with this is what we want to do. This is what it's going to do for us. This is how it's going to increase our profitability. This is how we're going to pay it back. We need to be in that position rather than not being in the know and letting somebody else run our business.
An area where it feels like attention must be paid, and your team is stressing right now is tax policy, which is also changing. How are you seeing the one big beautiful bill sort of transforming the way people should be thinking about their farming operations and what changes might be coming to impact them?
Well, the one big beautiful bill, I guess the good part to that for my coworkers and I with what we do is that the president signed that on July the 4th. Sometimes we find about those extensions way late in the game, and we are stressing out about what we're what the policy is going to be, what the IRS guidelines are going to be, almost after January the 1st, when we're doing tax returns for the year before. So it's nice to have those things nailed down ahead of time. That was a very narrow vote. I mean, that didn't pass by very many votes, any of that through the House, through the Senate. So a mandate, no, but certainly new policy. It's certainly nice to have stable policy. So we got more of the same as what we got, Kayla. So we've got an extension of our high standard deductions that we have now, an extension of the lower tax rates that we have. QBIT is still in place. So we got some comfort of knowing that things aren't shifting underneath us greatly. We got some comfort in knowing that the 179 expense selection was increased. It'll be a $2.5 million limit. It starts to phase out at $4 million. $2.5 million seems like a lot. It is a lot. It adequately takes care of most of the farm families that we work with. But it's nice to know that if we need to plan our tax strategy and use an expense selection, that we still have that in place. Bonus depreciation was another one of those things that was, we were scaling down on bonus depreciation. We're back to 100% for bonus depreciation. So it's nice to see some of those kind of things kind of maybe back where we thought they should be anyway, Kayla. No new changes there. The one big thing for those folks who are maybe somewhere near the end of their farming career, or thinking about that anyway, is our estate tax exemption. That got increased as of January 1 of 2026. That will be a $15 million estate tax exemption. It's indexed to inflation. That's per person. So a farm couple, as it were, would have a $30 million exemption. They did leave in place this idea of portability, which is if my spouse and I own things and I die first and I don't use all of my $15 million estate tax exemption, it's such that my wife can not only use her $15 million, but she can use the rest of my $15 million exemption that I didn't use. So those things are all good. But bear in mind, some states, Illinois being one of those states, Illinois has a state-oriented estate tax. And that limit for Illinois is $4 million. So most of the time in Illinois, when we're tax planning and we're planning for somebody to get out of the farming business, pass it on to the next generation, we're dealing with that $4 million Illinois limit, not a $15 million federal limit. Indiana has no estate tax, just depends on what state you're in. Be aware of what kind of estate tax you might have.
When you look at the farmers being worked with in the FBFM spectrum and you suss out who's profitable and who's winning. What are the people in the operations who are doing well? What are they doing differently?
Well, the first thing that they're doing differently in my mind is they're paying attention to their finances, right? They've got all those systems in place. They're not doing things out of two shoeboxes. They're better than that. So they know where they're at, and they can pull that reporting up instantaneously. I mean, they're using, QuickBooks, PC Mars. They're organized with all that. They have goals with all that. Some of the characteristics of some of those people, Kayla, would be debt to asset ratios. Have to know what your debt to asset ratio is. Sometimes that's a little bit bigger trick. If we have a 2,500 acre farm that's still operating as a sole proprietor, calculating that debt to asset ratio is one thing. But some of the folks we work with, they farm thousands of acres and they have an operating entity in place and a machinery holding entity in place. And then we've got the family members individually who own the land. Sometimes what we've got to do to make sure that we know where we're at is put together what I call a dynasty debt to asset ratio. That's what we need to know. That's how we need to work with that, to kind of combine that and put the pieces together. Different people have different ideas about debt to asset ratios in terms of what's good or what's bad. I'll just explain it this way. If your debt to asset ratio is over 50%, your lender owns more of your business than you do. That's probably a dangerous place to be. So the closer you get there, I won't say the more precarious your financial situation is, because I've seen people who have debt to asset ratios in excess of 50% be able to sustain that year after year after year. But got to pay attention to that. So have to know what that debt to asset ratio is. Need to know what our working capital is. Working capital would be current assets minus current liabilities. Have to know where that is. That's that current ratio is the divisor of that. But have to know what those are. Got to know how much gas there is in the tank. I had the ability to sit down with some folks and they've lost some working capital in each of the last 2 years. So we look at how much working capital they have now. And we play the what if game of what happens if 26 and 27 turn out to be like 24 and 25 were, and we're going to, what kind of working capital losses might we sustain? How can we mitigate some of that? And what might our working capital look like at the end of 26 when we're done with that year, and at the end of 27, just to put things in place to know where we're going to be? Debt service payment is another one of those. If we're borrowing money, and most of us are borrowing money, I have to know where we're at in terms of is my revenue such that I can pay all my farm expenses, pay my income tax, pay my family living expense, and service my debt, and then still have money left over at the end of that. So have to be able to make sure that we know how we're going to do all that and where the money's going to come from. The financial literacy on the farm, again, in this day and age, it's not a negotiable thing. And the bigger the farm is, the more non-negotiable it is. We just have to know where we're at financially.
It's really interesting when you think about that in contrast with the adoption of new technology and innovation to help drive that efficiency. And of course, we're going to get to that here after the break, which we're going to go to now. Ag Bioscience is supported by Indiana Farm Bureau.
A healthy company is a blessing, but a well-insured company is a necessity. That's why Indiana Farm Bureau offers more affordable health plans for eligible members. Whether you have just a handful of employees or a larger enterprise, building a stable business demands employees who are just as strong and healthy. Indiana Farm Bureau can help with health plans that include medical, dental, vision, and Medicare supplement insurance plans. And you can sign up for membership and apply for an Indiana Farm Bureau health plan any time of year. Indiana Farm Bureau understands the cost of healthcare has rapidly become one of the largest expenses for many small businesses. We invite you to compare our health plans to your current coverage. We're confident you could find significant savings. To learn more about the health plan that's right for you, visit infbhealthplans.com and make the switch today.
Welcome back to Ag Bioscience. We're talking with Dwight Robb, advisor for farm business, farm management. Dwight, your team works with some pretty comprehensive financial data, farm level financial data. And I kind of want to talk about the models that your team uses to help farmers sort of guide their decision-making process, make better decisions on farm for their operations.
Certainly. Some of that model was originated a long time ago, before I started with FBFM in November of 1987, Kayla. One of those reports that we use as part of the modeling that we do is a report that we call our economic management analysis. That report tells us many things. One of those things is it breaks down on a per acre basis what some of our costs are. Then we also have the unique ability to do. I mentioned that we have 5,500 members, right? So that gives us the ability to take the data that we have. Brad Zwilling is our data guru, but that gives us the ability to take that data. And once our field staff have attested that that data is complete and accurate, and we haven't left anything out of it, that data goes into bins, and then we create pools of data so that we can look at averages so that we can compare your 3,000 acre farm, Kayla, to your peers in terms of how do your costs stack up? And that's the whole range of cost on a farm. And you would think, well, those all look the same. No, they don't all look the same. That report lets us see things like the differences in operations where we've got a farmer that never takes a piece of machinery back to the dealership. They're good with a torch. They're good with a wrench. So their depreciation costs per acre are low because they're not buying new stuff. but their repair cost may be a little bit higher because they're doing it all on their own. So we see some of those kind of things go on. So that lets us, in my mind, as we think about that in our FBFM shop, it lets us find the things that an individual operator is doing well and accentuate that and say, go get them. These are the things that we're doing well. But it also lets us find the things that we're not doing so well and say, how can we do this a little bit better? So that EMA report, that economic management analysis, is one of our key things in that FBFM model that lets us help them manage their operation better.
When you look at, and this is a podcast largely about innovation and driving new technologies on the farm, but at the end of the day, if the economics aren't there, it's not really innovation, right, Dwight? And so when you look at how you're advising the farm management and financials for operations and the adoption of new innovations that help them be more ultimately efficient, both financially and in terms of operationally, how do you balance that when you're advising farmers? I'm sure it's a one-by-one basis, right? But ultimately, how do you create that sort of balance when you're consulting operations?
Well, one of the things we get to do with that is, yes, it is one-on-one, right? When I'm sitting down with you and we're talking about your farm operation, that's a one-on-one thing. But I also, with what I get to do with the farm families that I work with, I and all of my coworkers, I might have the ability, you might say, Dwight, I'm thinking about doing this. And I might work with somebody else, or one of my coworkers might work with somebody else who has seen whatever you're going to try either present challenges or not work very well. So we've got the ability to pass on what we would consider to be best management practices. And, you know, there's always somebody out there who's the innovator, who's on the leading edge of things, maybe sometimes the bleeding edge of things, where you invest in some technology and maybe you're the first one to do that and it doesn't work well. We've obviously got confidence that we have to protect in our FBFM shop, but there are some things in terms of best management practices that we as consultants can pass on. And we certainly do that. That's part of our charge. If we see, you know, we're working for our members, Kayla. So their best interest is what's first in our mind. And so if there's something that we can do that will help them or prevent them in terms of technology adoption, whether that's tillage practices, whether that's software, whether that's hardware, whether that's technology fees of some type, it's our duty a little bit to make sure that we're aware of all those things. And that if we have folks who have tried and tested those things, that we pass that on in terms of what works or maybe what doesn't work. Or if they're thinking about doing something, connecting them to the people that we think does that right.
When you look over the next 15 years, it's this estimated 40% of U.S. agricultural land is supposed to change hands. I believe that's the statistic that I've seen floating around. Whether or not that's accurate or what the delta is on that, I'm not really sure. But that's the one I see floating around most. And so when you look at the succession planning that you guys do and you see the financial literacy piece that you're trying to create, how do you prepare that next generation between financial literacy, the adoption of new innovation, the preference of that next generation farmer, and how they best run their operations, that entire swath of transition into the next era of farm management?
When you put it that way, Kayla, every 28-year-old that is in line, you know, that there's a family, they should be terrified right now, right? Cause that's a big job right now. So there's lots of things to think about, but I'm going to go back to, how do we prepare for that? Kayla, if we don't have good financial information, we can't prepare for that very well, or it may not turn out like we think it's going to. And I'm even going to go back one more basic step of make sure we have all the pieces in place before we start to let the clutch out and move forward on some of that. There was a family farm operation where there was the heir apparent, and one of our staff was involved with this and sat down with everybody in the family to talk about things so that everybody could talk freely. And the heir apparent wanted no part of the farm. So maybe back up with and start and make sure that we've all got our eyes set on the same goal. In terms of passing things from one generation to the next, to make sure that they're all prepared for that. Not all the time. It seems like it's frequent that there are multiple, that what was grandpa that passed to my dad, what was my dad's, passed to me, and it's going to pass to my kids, that next generation, that third generation, I'll call them. There's multiple of them, right? Because farms have grown in size. You know, what was my dad on 1,000 acres is me on 2,500 acres, and it's now going to be my kids on 8,000 acres. So there's more than one operator there. So we've got to prepare for, we've got to prepare those folks for being able to work with each other. So now once we've got some of those basics and we've got our entities in place and we know how we're going to do that in terms of an operating entity and a machinery holding entity and how we're going to do all that. Now we got to get to the back to the operation of things and how are we going to continue with technology? I mean, this isn't going away. I mean, look at the changes that we've had in the seed business and in the machinery business and in terms of technology and drones. And, you know, and how many years ago was it that we weren't even using drones? And now they're an integral part of some of our operations. So I can't predict the future and what's going to happen there, Caleb, but I can certainly say buckle up and maybe not plan for the future. For me, that's hard to do, but I can certainly prepare for it and think about how am I going to react? How am I, in terms of technology, how am I going to react if we have another 2 years worth of $4 corn and $10 beans? And what kind of technology can I afford? And how am I going to find out where am I going to get the best payoff for the technology that I want to buy? Whether that's machinery or however that is. But can certainly prepare for those things and can certainly prepare for what might happen in the macro economy. You know, the Fed came out yesterday and lowered interest rates another 25 basis points. Just be fully aware of all those things in terms of how you're running your business. It's, golly, it's no small stakes business to be in farming anymore. And so to be a good manager, no disrespect to generations that were before us, but this is really a high stakes game and mistakes cost a lot more than they used to. You know, when we're levered up and we've got entities and we've got multiple families that are making a living off of a farming enterprise, the mistakes are costly. So we need to make sure that we're preparing for those things and thinking all the way through them as we're transferring them to the next generation.
As you look ahead to 2026 and you think about those critical decisions that have to be made, what is the one piece of advice? If you had one piece of advice that you wanted to offer on this podcast, Dwight, what would it be?
For 2026?
Mm-hmm.
If you haven't done it already, you need to know what your 2026 cash flow is going to look like. It's a plan, right? You're preparing for 2026. So use your five-year APH yields. Use your WASD price. Start to build that because you know what your expenses are. You know what your family living is. You know what your debt service is for next year. Look to see how that's going to turn out. And know that now. If you know that your 2026 cash flow is going to be tight or maybe not work, we need to be thinking about that now, not next August.
That's good advice. Dwight Robb, advisor for Farm Business Farm Management, thank you so much for coming on Ag Bioscience.
Thank you.
And thank you for joining us. You can subscribe, rate, review wherever you listen or watch podcasts. On behalf of the entire Agrinovis team, we'll see you next week right here on the podcast.
Ag Bioscience is a podcast by Agrinovis Indiana, brought to you by Indiana Farm Bureau. Produced by Kayla Chittister and Fabian Rodriguez. Photography and design by Kaylee Verstey. Video by Darren Cooper and 1898 Creative. If you like today's episode, subscribe, rate, listen, and review. Get all episodes of Ag Bioscience online at agrinovisindiana.com.